This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Chinese Emperor Shen Neng drank cannabis tea to ease his gout, rheumatism, and malaria back in 2027 BC. We may recognize the benefits of medicinal marijuana thousands of years ago, but we just started making it legal in America. Now it's legal in 23 states, including Connecticut, over these last 9 months. How much has the Connecticut medical marijuana program grown? Well, you may have heard that the state is actually running spots on public radio, letting potential patients know they can sign up. It's produced much like other medicine, and it's not your emperor's tea. It's lab-tested, standardized, dispensed by your pharmacist. Patients call it a miracle drug that offers relief from once intractable symptoms, unresponsive to traditional medications. Yet the stigma is hard to shake. Sanjay Gupta, medical correspondent for CNN, changed his mind after spending a year working on the documentary Weed.
I didn't look far enough. I didn't look deep enough. I didn't look at labs in other countries that are doing some incredible research. I didn't listen to the chorus of patients who said, not only does marijuana work for me, it's the only thing that works for me.
These attitudes are changing, but it's still illegal under federal law, which can make doctors sometimes reluctant to order it, difficult for scientists to study it. Today, we'll talk about Connecticut's medicinal marijuana program. Do you use medical marijuana? How much do you know about it? If you want to join the conversation, 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live, and you can find us on CTN, the Connecticut Network. They're taping today's program for future broadcast. Joining us in studio first is Jonathan Harris. He's commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, which oversees this program. Commissioner, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, John. Good morning to everyone.
So first of all, let's give a short overview of the medical marijuana program. It's been around for about 9 months now. Who qualifies for it, and how many patients do you have in the program right now?
Well, first of all, this is the first and really only, I'd say, medical marijuana program in the country that's truly medical-based. It's the only one that is based on a pharmaceutical model. We regulate medical marijuana just like we do any other pharmaceutical. So that's really key when it comes to the quality of the product, knowing what's in it, and having the professionals, like you'll hear from Jerry Ann, the pharmacists and the physicians driving the healthcare out there to give relief to patients from pain, from symptoms, and from the underlying disease condition.
So you're saying it's different than the programs we've heard about in many other states. It's legal in some 23 states, but we heard an awful lot about programs in California or Washington State. This is different, again, specifically how?
Well, I have a friend, for instance, in California that has a medical marijuana card. I don't really know what their condition is, and that's one of the problems that we have here, really a challenge, is to kind of let people know that we are not Colorado, we are not California. This is a medical program. It's not about recreational use. That's another policy issue that other people can deal with and talk about. This is about providing medical relief to patients in a very holistic way, as you'll hear later in the program, I'm sure. So we are different than any other state. And because of that, it has grown steadily, but we have not had, and I think this is a benefit, an explosion of people using medical marijuana. It has grown at a very steady pace. So, for example, when the product first came online last September 2014, there were about 1,683 patients. At our last count, the beginning of June, we had 4,097 patients, a huge increase. Even over the last 3 months, we've seen the number of patients go up by about 35%. The physicians that are certifying patients, there were about 108 back in October of 2014, now 222. This year it's 105 or so percent increase. So we're seeing more acceptance, more understanding, and that's because of the benefits it's providing people suffering in Connecticut.
Are there challenges to getting doctors and patients to sign up for this right now? I mean, I mentioned the fact I was somewhat surprised. One of my jobs here is to approve underwriting copy that comes through for the radio station, and your department is actually taking out time on our air to let people know that they can sign up for this program. So are you having any struggles with this? Is this growing about at the rate that you'd expect?
I'd say there are always challenges because, you want to have the growth. You want to be able to private sector model. There are people out there like Jerry Ann who have invested a lot of time, money, and energy, producers like Tom who have done the same. And so you want to have this grow so it's successful, and that takes expanding the market. The job of the regulators, of course, are to make sure that the products are safe, to make sure that the program operates in a way that's beneficial to everybody. But since we want to have a successful program, we are also there to make sure that people understand what it is, that it's a medical program, that it's legal under state law, that the feds, as you'll hear, have taken, you know, a step back and are not coming in and interfering with it within the legitimate program, and that we're here to let people know that it's real, there's innovation on the ground, there are dosable products, there's science out there, not just anecdotal evidence, and that it's something that people should think about. And most importantly, that not most, but something that's also part of our job as the drug control people in the state, is that this is a viable alternative to opioids. We have an epidemic in this country, horrible destruction on the ground in Connecticut. In the last few years, the deaths from opioid overdoses have gone up basically like 86%. About 145 deaths, I believe, in 2012. It was up to about 350 in 2014.
And these are for prescription opioids used the wrong way, and also heroin deaths, so sort of a gateway that comes through. A lot of people get addicted to opioids and then end up buying much more cheap heroin, and that is what causes so many problems.
Exactly. And people do not overdose on medical marijuana, but it can provide some of the same relief. In ways, better relief, more holistic, and actually get to underlying disease condition, as you'll hear about, unlike some of the opioids.
And we'll be talking about some of the disease conditions in just a moment, but I do want to ask you more about getting doctors involved because, I mean, we've talked about this on this program extensively here. There is, in many people's mind, a little too quick an action with the pen to prescribe opioids amongst some physicians. People want pain relief, and those opioids can cause a real problem. Are doctors reluctant, for whatever reason, to begin to prescribe medical marijuana in the state? And how are we breaking down those barriers? Because obviously you're trying to grow the number of patients who can legitimately benefit from this product, but you've got to have the doctors who are ready to write the prescription.
We grow it by the same way we do with all public policy. What our job is as public servants is to educate the public, to educate professionals, so that at least people make their conclusions off the same plate of real information. And one of the problems that we have, of course, is for the last century plus in this country, and still in some ways with the federal government, what I termed a Neanderthal attitude, is the demonization of marijuana. And, you know, even the feds to this day don't see that there's medical benefit. We have loads of anecdotal evidence and mounting scientific evidence that that's not true. So I understand that the physicians might be wary of that. They might be wary of, even though it's legal under state law, there's, you know, federal connections with their license. And that's something that we have to get out and educate them about the attitude currently of the federal government. And also they have an understandable concern about the ability to dose the medicine. But with all of the innovation on the ground, the amount of flower of the bud that people are used to, and the images, unfortunately, that they always get with pictures from Colorado, not of our program, that's shrinking, and it's harder to dose, even though at least in Connecticut, you know the percentages of THC and CBDs and within it and everything in the product. But now with the innovation on the ground, with what the producers are doing and working with the dispensaries, these other products, edibles, tinctures, topicals, Listerine strips, things that are amazing, not only for health but creating really good jobs on the ground too, over 140 in the state so far, not even including the multiplier effect, that they are able to dose. So we get that information out so people can make, including physicians, reasonable decisions, and you've seen the numbers growing.
Well, one last policy question before we move and talk about some of these specifics, though. You know, over time, obviously, there have been conversations about whether or not Connecticut will expand in some way toward a legalization of marijuana beyond a medical program. There has been decriminalization in the state. Clearly, that has not gone to the level of what we've seen in other states like Colorado. Do you support, or are you in some ways wary of any movement toward full legalization, given this now, as you see, success of this medical program? Might you be set back if all of a sudden Connecticut becomes Colorado?
Connecticut's not going to become Colorado. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I have my personal views on legalization, but as Commissioner of the Department of Consumer Protection, I am charged with and proud to be and happy to be charged with helping to develop a private sector medical marijuana program regulated like any other pharmaceutical. And I think that to the extent that there's a hook to legalization, I think that our ability to tear down the stigma and the misinformation and disinformation about marijuana can only help that argument. But that's not our fight. We're about providing relief to patients on the ground from pain, symptoms, and the underlying disease condition, and working with the private sector to make sure this relief is there. And also, a real benefit for the state going on, we always talk about jobs, not only the good jobs, I said, 130-plus already on the ground, but if we get ahead of the curve on research and Connecticut bolsters its already strong biotech and advanced manufacturing, because we still have that strong, even though people like to cut, kick ourselves in the rear. This is another thing that when the feds loosen up, that we will be the place that they look to come and do research. And that means more jobs. That means more relief. And that's good for not only Connecticut, but everybody.
We're talking with Jonathan Harris, who's commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. They oversee the medical marijuana program in the state. And we're learning more about the program as it grows. It's been a little bit more than a year since we had his predecessor on talking about this program as it was just getting started. We're getting an update today. And we want to bring into the conversation three people who can put a little bit more of a human face on this. Of course, it's important to know how exactly these products get produced, how they get dispensed, and how they are used on the ground by people. So first I'll bring in Thomas Schultz, who's president of Connecticut Pharmaceutical Solutions. It's a medical marijuana producer based in Portland, Connecticut. Tom, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Good morning, John.
Also with us is Jerry Ann Bradley, who's owner and pharmacist of Healing Corner, a medical marijuana dispensary, which is in Bristol, Connecticut. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, John.
And Kurt Smith is a patient who is certified to use medical marijuana. And Kurt, we'll be talking to you in a moment. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
So first of all, Tom Schultz, maybe you can explain, the commissioner was talking about this before. I mean, how is marijuana produced for medicinal purposes here in the state? And how is it different than a recreational grower might produce it?
Well, generally speaking, when you're talking about recreational growers, you're talking about the black market and you're talking about no regulation whatsoever. And unfortunately, a lot of what happens in that market is, let's say, cast onto us, which is completely false. Our conditions for growing marijuana mean that we document all of our soils and everything that goes into that soil so that at any given time we can tell you exactly which type of plant is in which soil, for how long, what the hours of light, that soil, that plant has received, how much water. Our water is reverse osmosis purified, so we know exactly what's in the water. And we know exactly how we've done everything to each plant. We can do it again, and we do.
And are you then also creating the various forms of the product that is delivered to someone like Jerry? How does that work?
Yes. We have some very serious scientists in our employ. They produce extracts that patients use, extracts of various kinds for various disease states. And our charge in producing medicine and medications is to be able to produce predictable quantities of predictable constituents each time we produce it. So there's no mystery as to what's in any dose of any product that we produce. If we've produced it this month, we can produce exactly the same thing next month or for 6 months running from here. That's critical to treating a patient.
So then, Jerry, maybe you can talk about the range of products and the ways in which people might be able to take this drug and use for the symptoms very specifically that they have in the doses that they need.
So what Tom was just saying is very important, that we need consistency so when a patient gets started on a type of cannabis therapy that we can reproduce it. If it's a seizure patient who needs CBD, let me just backtrack a little bit. So there's THC, which is the main ingredient that everybody knows causes the psychoactive euphoria. And then also in the marijuana plant is CBD, the other popular cannabinoid, cannabidiol. And it has non-psychoactive properties and comes really in handy in people who are naive to cannabis use or just need it for symptoms and are working during the day and can't afford to have that euphoria. So when Tom says that, when we're treating a seizure patient especially who maybe is in their 20s and doesn't need the THC or psychoactive effect, we need that consistency from the growers. And they've done an outstanding job in Connecticut. When I got involved, I wasn't really sure what to expect. I had no idea how the growers would actually produce the plant and whether they would. And they've made us very proud. We're able to do that. We start patients on a regimen, and we can consistently refill their prescriptions once we determine exactly what's working for them.
Can you explain how you work with doctors? Because one of the things we wanted to get to, and I asked the commissioner about this a little bit, is getting doctors actually ready and willing to prescribe. So then how do you work back and forth with the doctor? Because I will say for what we'll call traditional medications, my doctor's relationship with the pharmacist is he or she writes a prescription. I go and pick it up at the pharmacy. They say, do you have any questions about how to take it? And then I take it. It sounds to me like you might have a little bit more hands-on interface with the patients.
Yes. So I think having experience, I owned an independent for 18 years. I think having that experience, I know a lot of physicians, and I'm out there on the ground educating, trying to get them all to understand that this is a viable alternative for some patients that have failed on all other conventional therapies. And so I'm every day. We had a symposium 2 days ago. Yesterday, I was trying to educate the employee assistance programs, and we try to stay in contact with doctors as much as possible. They're able to, when they certify a patient, go into the site where they certify and give us as many instructions as they want. And honestly, with this drug, as the doctor base grows, they're more likely to call us. They have their nurses and PAs call the dispensary all the time to follow up on the patients. It's also, Connecticut has a prescription monitoring program that can every professional doctor or PA can see. So the marijuana is also listed with their other controlled substances. So the doctor can track without having firsthand conversation with the dispensary what the patient is using. Generally, they call to ask questions, though, because it's also new.
We're talking today about the state's medical marijuana program. It's been in place for about 9 months or so. We're checking back in with it after our first check-in about a year or so ago. Jonathan Harris is with us. He's the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, which oversees this program. You just heard from Jerry Ann Bradley, who's an owner and pharmacist of Healing Corner, one of the medical marijuana dispensaries in the state. Thomas Schultz is from Connecticut Pharmaceutical Solutions. They're a producer. And in just a moment, we'll be hearing from a patient as well. If you have calls or questions, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about Connecticut's medical marijuana program. There are almost 4,000 enrollees. Over 9 months, demand is growing. Patients call it a miracle drug, which eases symptoms for many medical conditions. If you have a question about the program, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. Let's quickly go to Lawrence, who's calling from Plainville. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Sure. I'd like to tell a story about my son who has intractable epilepsy. We've tried all the anti-epileptic drugs, the conventional drugs. He's tried maybe 12 or 14 different ones, and most of them have terrible side effects. Many came with black box warnings on them. So we decided to try the ketogenic diet after that, which didn't work as well. So we read a lot about the success they've had in Colorado with medical marijuana. So what we did was we finally got him a card in Connecticut here. And we've been waiting probably 9 months to get the right strain. So he needs a high CBD strain. And we just got it within the last 2 weeks or so. And he's totally turned around. He's much more alert. He's a lot less foggy than he's been on the conventional drugs.
How old is your son, if you don't mind me asking, Lawrence?
Oh, sure. He's 19, and he started with epilepsy when he was about 15. So it's been about 4 years or so.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for your phone call and for your story, and I'm glad to hear that that this is working for you. I guess I'll ask you first, Tom, just very quickly. He's talking about waiting for the right strain for his son. Can you just explain maybe the difficulty in that or how that works?
Well, there's two different ways to go with producing medicine. One is to try to get the right plant that's exactly right for a given condition. Another one is to go to the science and try to produce from any given plant, the right medicine for that condition. in an industry that started last September, as Jonathan said, it's very difficult to sort of hit the ground with medication that's appropriate for every condition. But we're very aware of the need for the kinds of medicines that Jerry Ann has discussed, and I'm very happy to hear that the caller's son is finding some relief.
We're covering a story, Commissioner Harris, over the course of the last couple of weeks about a family that has a young child who has the same sort of epileptic symptoms that this gentleman's son had, but who is under 18. And currently, this program is not available for patients under 18 years of age. The legislation that was proposed did not pass during the last legislative session. Do you see an expansion coming for kids under 18?
That legislation unfortunately got caught up with some of the chaos at the end of the session. There's widespread support on both sides of the aisle for it. We have been able to get it into the discussions on the implementer bill because there are revenue implications with licensing fees and expanding the market that would be revenue to the state of Connecticut. We don't do it for that, but it gives you the hook to be able to discuss it in the budget context. And I think it'll happen. There's no reason. I've asked people, and I still don't have an answer. Maybe someone will give me a good one. What drug out there is completely restricted from prescribing it to a minor? Now, it's in the physician's best interest, and I know there's some that are not recommended, and that I understand. But I leave that to the professionals, to the doctors, to the pharmacists to decide. And it's even more restrictive, by the way, the way we had it with kids. Not only did you have to be certified by just a doc, you had to have your pediatrician, the parent or guardian sign off, and a doctor with expertise in that particular debilitating condition. So we made it more difficult because we understand people's concerns, and it wouldn't be smoked or vaporized. It would be the other line of products that are coming in for the kids.
Our own Ray Hardman has been following a family. Actually, he's moving to Maine because they have this illegal for kids, and they can't live here unless they have this. Very quickly, Jerry, I have to ask you, dosing adult medication for kids has always been a problem. I mean, this has always been a struggle and a challenge for regulators and for doctors themselves. Can we feel confident that this is something that can be overcome in the medical marijuana field?
Yes, that's what we're doing on the ground, actually. It's a little bit of trial and error, like Tom was saying, that we just got started in September. There's been a little bit of a lag in getting the right products available and figuring out exactly what the dose is for these over 18. Currently, we do have some epileptic patients 19 to 22, and finding that exact right dose is a little easier in marijuana than it is in traditional anti-epileptic drugs.
We're going to get to some more phone calls in just a moment, but I want to bring into the conversation Kurt Smith, who is part of the program. He's certified to use medical marijuana, one of the roughly 4,000 or so patients statewide who is. And Kurt, thanks again for coming in. What's your condition?
So my qualifying condition is spasticity, so injury to the nervous tissue of the spinal cord causing chronic spasm.
And so what other medications have you tried over your lifetime to help ease your pain, to help ease the problem?
You know, the list is long. You know, I've been through just about every muscle relaxer they prescribe. Those are not intended to be used for long periods of time. And pain medications to deal with the results of that spasm. And I've been on medications as strong as fentanyl, you know, all the way down to your regular 5-milligram dosage of Vicodin that they prescribe for toothaches and whatever, you know. And I was on those medications for about 5 years. So I got into the program in February, and since then I was able to completely stop using my pain medication, and now I'm the only time I use my muscle relaxers is when I can't use the medical marijuana.
How is it that you use it? Is there a specific a product that you use to take the medicine?
Sure. So I use pretty much the full range of products that they've made available in facilities like Jerry Ann's. And so the raw dried flower, you know, I think that's probably one of the most popular products in the dispensaries because that's what people know. But I have to talk a little bit about the concentrates that they produce from there because it's a newer thing for me. And there are so many ways to use it. I'll talk about one of Tom's products specifically. I purchased it yesterday. It's a syringe of oil, okay, and it has a higher ratio of CBD to THC. That product is so versatile. You can inject this from the syringe into a capsule and take it like you would take a normal medication. You can infuse it with cooking oils and you can use it in food, or you can vaporize this product. And you could probably smoke it too, but vaporizing is the healthier way. The edibles are where I find the most relief. I find it easy to dose, the medication that way. So it's a really versatile thing, and they tend to be a little more expensive than maybe your smallest increment of flower or like a wax, which is another concentrate.
How expensive?
Not expensive. So I'll give you an example of what I was doing before the program and what I do now. So so I had always used marijuana edibles, probably going back about 5-6 years because of the problems that I had with my back. And I always supplemented pain medication, muscle relaxers with the edibles. But I would spend about $100 on about 7 grams of marijuana. And what I got from whoever I got it from, they tell you what it is. You don't know for sure what it is. And even if something did work for you, try and get the same thing next week. Can't do it. But for that $100, I would be able to get about 60 doses out of that. Yesterday, I think I paid roughly between $75 and $80 for this, and I will make twice as many edibles as I would pay for that $100 increment of marijuana that I purchased outside the program.
Well, John from Meriden actually has a question that goes to this. And John, go ahead.
Yeah, I was doing some research recently online, and I went to a normal meeting the other night. And it seems that the doctors who prescribe medical marijuana and the dispensaries that provide it are not accepting health insurance coverage. Yet in Connecticut, for diabetics, thousands of dollars of medical supplies are covered at 100%. Yet there doesn't seem to be any coverage for medical marijuana. And alternatively, if it were just, deregulated like alcohol and monitored the same way and taxed the same way, that wouldn't be an issue. So
well John,
is there any site, any in the future, is it looking like it will be covered by insurance?
Let me ask the commissioner. So what do we know about insurance coverage?
Well, the law specifically says that it's not mandated that insurance companies cover, and that's the way the law is now. Again, this is the nascent part, the beginning of this program. As it grows, I believe there will be insurance companies, people that are skilled at assessing risk and making money off of that, that will actually start covering this. And just like anybody else, it'll happen. I don't think the answer, though, is to blow the lid off and all of a sudden go to legalization. And the idea of taxing medicine, to me, doesn't make sense. There was a move this year in the legislature. I don't think you should tax people's medicine.
Okay, but let's just go back to the insurance piece. If this is, and if you're making a very convincing case that it is like a legitimate form of controlled medicine that's being produced here in the state that will serve people and help them with their problems, why on earth isn't it covered by insurance?
I think that's going to be a business decision ultimately that the insurance companies will make. And again, I'm pretty confident that when they see when the feds begin relaxing and not just have their hands off, I think you're going to start seeing coverage by insurance companies. And there are other ways that we've been working on to make sure that people of, that have some lesser means can have access to the product.
Is it fair to say that we don't leave it to a business decision for other things? We would actually require health insurance coverage for other conditions or for other medications. why is this one different? I mean, why are we leaving it to a business decision?
Well,
we don't
mandate everything. I mean, yeah. Connecticut, as states go, has, I think, a higher amount of mandates than most states, and we don't mandate everything. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it does come down to a business decision by the insurance companies, as it should be. Maybe someday the public policymakers will decide that this should be mandated. That is a discussion that maybe will be had. But right now, they don't have to. I think it'll happen. But there are other ways to make sure that people get the medical marijuana they need for relief, like we've heard today.
Did you want to jump in on that, Jerry?
I do. We think that by collecting data to show that the patients are actually reducing all of their medication mm-hmm. intake will then create a good business decision for most of the insurance companies. And as soon as we can prove to them that this is actually going to save them money, it's going to happen.
Making the case over time. Let's go to Rita, who's calling from Hartford. Hi, Rita.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So this is sort of related or question more for the commissioner, but my husband has specificity related to a spinal cord injury. He's had surgery. He sees a doctor regularly, and they prescribe tons of medication, which makes him drowsy. They don't work. So he's 61, never smoked marijuana. About 5 years ago, someone gave us some to try. It works fabulously. We don't want to be out trying to find it and buy it. His doctor is part of Hartford Hospital. His doctor believes in it, knows it works, but his group does not want to prescribe. So my question is, why isn't there a published list of doctors that can prescribe by whatever they specialize in? Or if not, why can't his doctor refer him directly to a prescribing doctor? He can't even give us a name, or, you know, he said it's too bad you don't have, you know, a form of cancer and you could go to Helen and Harry Gray. I mean, how do you find a doctor when you meet all the criteria and your doctor isn't allowed to prescribe?
Rita, it's a great question. So I'll ask you first, Commissioner. I think Kurt might want to weigh in on this too.
Yeah, there are referrals going on all the time. I mean, there are doctors that are willing to, you know, step out and certify patients, and that's happening. As far as published list goes, you know, we consider it. There always are different concerns, HIPAA concerns, things like that, so we want to think everything through about what information actually becomes public. But I think that most docs that don't want to prescribe or certify, but they think that their patients would benefit, they know where to go. So I would just ask and ask the specific question.
Kurt?
I just want to give this family some encouraging words, because my doctor, my regular PCP, is also part of Hartford Hospital Medical Group. And I asked him about it when the program first started, and he said, we don't have a lot of information, you know, and he wasn't comfortable with sending me to somebody that could certify me. A few months later, after other medications were tried and they didn't work, I said, you know, I'm sorry, but I hope you'll support me. I'm going to try and do this. And within 90 days, I was off all those medications. So don't be afraid to, you know, see another doctor. Don't be afraid to stop by these dispensaries and ask for information. They're all over the state, and they're very helpful. That's exactly how I found the doctor that certified me. I stopped by Prime Wellness in South Windsor. I knocked on the door, and I said, can you help me? And they did.
Again, we don't have a published list because?
Well, we will think about that and see what to do. I mean, I don't think there's any real restriction on just the identity of a doctor. Obviously, docs are published with specialties
exactly.
Just in general. But
when I talked with your predecessor about this before the program got started, and there were maybe, you know, less than 700 people signed up at the time, there is a concern, I think, amongst some of the public, maybe some lawmakers, regulators, that would say, well, you put out a list and you're going to get people who are drug seeking. You're going to get people lining up for certain doctors, and certain doctors are going to get into the business of giving stuff to people they shouldn't. And all of a sudden, we're California or Colorado. So, like, is that part of the reason why we don't have a list right now?
I think all these things have to be thought through, because, again, we're trying to take the steps to grow this program in a steady but thoughtful an effective way, and we don't want to have unintended consequences, some of which you raised. So it's something that I think, as we have critical mass that's growing and more need and the stigma is getting torn down, that I think we have to reconsider. But suffice to say that if you go to a dispensary, you ask the right questions to people, most of the people that I know that have been certified are able to find the place to go.
I want to ask you, Tom, about the stigma piece of this. One of the big challenges for a lot of doctors is they want to see research, right? I mean, doctors should want to see a lot of research about any medication that they're going to prescribe. And there's been a tamping down nationally of research around some of these products. Do you think that that's one of the barriers?
It's a terrible barrier. And there is legislation pending in Connecticut to enable research. From our point of view, not just for the sake of – certainly for the sake of the small children that we're all familiar with seizures who can be helped by this program, but also for the sake of the adults with cancer and with Parkinson's and with spinal injuries and other conditions, the research is critical. But it's as Jonathan mentioned, this goes way beyond simple patient care. Right now, the leading countries in the world – for marijuana research are probably number one Israel, probably without a doubt, and number two probably Italy. There's no reason why in America, with the quality of the program that we have here in Connecticut, that the Connecticut River Valley shouldn't be the Silicon Valley of biotechnical research. We would really like to see that develop.
Is the biggest barrier the fact that, again, it's still not federally approved?
No. What we are simply looking for is for the Connecticut State Legislature to enable research in Connecticut that would allow us to proceed. If we can proceed with good science and demonstrate that this product has helped people like our patients who have called in or like Brian, that would be fabulous.
I want to get to a few more phone calls when we come back from a break. A lot more people have questions. We're visiting today with Tom Schultz, who is a medical marijuana producer, Jerrianne Bradley, who is a pharmacist who runs a dispensary. Jonathan Harris is the commissioner of the State Department of Consumer Protection. They oversee this program we've been talking about. And Kurt Smith is a patient who benefits from the program. If you have questions, 860-275-7266. And this is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, you maybe have heard this. CEOs today make a lot of money, in some cases hundreds of times more than their rank-and-file employees. For instance, there's new data from the Connecticut Office of Healthcare Access that shows the salaries for 18 healthcare executives at some 11 Connecticut hospitals top $1 million, even as some of these hospitals look to cut jobs. We're going to try to get to the bottom of executive pay, separate some fact from some fiction. That's on Monday's show. Hope you can join us. Today, we're talking about Connecticut's medical marijuana program, about 9 months old. We're taking your phone calls at 860-275-7266. Let's go to Steve in Hartford. Hi, Steve. You're on Where We Live.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a lot of feelings on this. I'm going to try and keep it brief and focused. Look, I think if we go back even less recently than 10 years ago, the state's official position on medical marijuana was that Connecticut would never have a medical marijuana program. Now here we are today, we have a state official saying Connecticut will never be recreational, will never be Colorado. So I want to take that with a grain of salt. I think your listeners should too. And I want to posit that on a long enough timeline, whether it's 5, 10, 15 years, we're either going to have explicit recreational like Colorado or we're going to have tacit recreational like California. And in that perspective, this whole medical program the state is building is really sort of an exorbitant waste of legislative time and effort and taxpayer money. Because, look, if 10 years from now we're dismantling this whole thing, and I do want to say I'm very glad that there's a handful of people that need this that are able to get help in this country, or in this state, rather. But what I would like to see and what I don't see and what I don't hear is Connecticut lending its voice to the national chorus of growing voices that says – this is prohibition. And unfortunately, this state program is just continued enforcement of that same prohibition.
I'm wondering, Steve, I'm just going to ask you one quick question to this, though. One of the things that has been interesting to me about learning about the producers that have come in here and the ways in which you can do dosing, you can grow different plants that will help people in different ways, you can make different products. Is there some sense that if Connecticut gets really good at doing this, both for medical and maybe at some future point recreational use, that indeed we would be creating the type of product that many people could use and that we would be at the forefront of that? That maybe there's some, even from your perspective, some really good thing coming out of the state for the future here?
I do think there are positives to the program. Like I said, I certainly don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I would say that This idea that it's only these new commercially legal growers that are perfecting this, you know, it's as if, you know, and I no offense to your guests, but these guys are not inventing the wheel. I mean, there have been black market growers producing very fine products in edibles and other sorts of consumables. The problem, you know, one of your guests mentioned the problem is you can't go back necessarily the, well, 2 weeks later and get the same thing. But again, that's a result of prohibition. That's a fact that this guy making oil or wax or whatever can't do it on a scale big enough to make sure that your guest can come back 2 weeks later and get the same thing.
Steve, I really appreciate your phone call. I know Kurt wants to jump in. Commissioner, you go first.
Well, I would actually yield to Kurt. But first of all, Steve, I want to apologize if I wasn't clear. I didn't say that we would never have recreational. I didn't say that that was out of the question. I said that that's not what this program is about. This program is not Colorado or California. This program is not recreational. That is up to policymakers. It's a different decision. I would challenge people, and maybe Kirk can talk about this, to compare those other supposed medical programs and the innovation, the dosability, the variety of products, the effectiveness of those products to Connecticut. I don't think it's a comparison. We are leaps and bounds ahead of them because we've done it this way.
Kurt?
You know, the word prohibition being used, I'm gonna say one thing. Let's say this did get legalized, okay? And full-fledged legalization, people are smoking in Pope Park and whatever, right? You're not going to the liquor store to get something that works for illnesses like the conditions that we have here, okay? That's not going to happen. The science in the medicine still needs to be there regardless of whether or not it's publicly available at 7-Eleven or at a dispensary. That I don't see that changing. I don't. This program was intelligently put together. The products are well thought out for the conditions that they're accepting in the program, and this is a totally different thing. So you know, I don't want listeners to get the wrong idea about what's going on here. Certainly legalization might change this, but it's not going to change the fact that these people have put a lot of time into the technology that's being used here, and it's effective.
Did anyone want to jump in?
You're not going to find that CBD product, non-psychoactive, that's treating most of the MS patients, Parkinson's patients, epileptic patients, all the spastic and even the spine disorders. You don't find that on the black market.
In the same way that there may be heroin out there, and I don't know what the arguments about that positive or negative would be, as Kurt points out, we have pharmacies that deal with medicine for people with illnesses. This is new. The human endocannabinoid system on which all of the science is based was not discovered until 1992. There's a huge opportunity here both to help patients and to develop an industry in Connecticut. I think the DCP has gotten a spectacular head start on the rest of the country. I think we should pursue it.
By the way, if you go to Tom's facility or the other three producers, this is not a cottage industry. And there are millions of dollars that have been invested in machinery and in growing technology, in genetics, in product development, just like a Pfizer would be doing. And so to say that somehow you just let all these little people in their kitchen do it, it's not a real good comparison.
But can I just ask a question that I asked your predecessor about this? You, Tom, did put an awful lot of money into this. There's a lot of investment into this program. You have to have a certain value proposition here. There has to be a certain number of people willing to pay money for it for this program to actually work. And so the question is, have we tuned this right? I mean, are we going to have the right number of patients to support the amount of expense that we've put into this in order to grow this industry, essentially?
I believe we will. 1,683 patients less than a year ago when product first came online. Over 4,000 now, growing every single day, week, month. I can understand why people that have invested have some concerns, but it's happening.
Given all of that, we haven't talked about the list. I believe there are currently 11 conditions right now that are approved. Is that number going to go up?
We actually have a mechanism under the regulations. We have a board of physicians, the experts in the field of medicine. When the public is allowed to petition for a new condition, we've received 7 that we've acted on. Public hearing happens, public comment. Board of Physicians makes a recommendation to me, and I decide as commissioner. We are adding 6 conditions to those 11. There is at least one other petition that's pending now, and we expect that to be steadily growing. If people want to have a condition considered, they should petition, and they can find it on our website on how to do that.
I don't want this question to sound as cynical as it may to some, but I will just say, is there a concern at all that we would continue to add conditions so that we add the right number of patients so that we end up making this program actually work financially?
We are adding conditions based on the petitions. There haven't been a flood of them. There have been, as I say, probably eight so far. And it's a thoughtful process, public hearing, public comment, recommendation by experts to me, and I think it through with staff. And we're going to do it what's based on medicine, science, anecdotal information, and what's good for patients.
Is there a concern at all about the economics of this on your end, Tom?
Not really. Our concern is for the science. We would like to sort of take the approach that if we build it, they will come. If we have effective science, we're really quite confident that there's an effective industry here. That in the end, what we're talking about is, can we help people like Kurt with conditions that are not responding to conventional medication? And we're quite confident we can. We're confident there's value there. We're not really that worried as to whether or not the industry will develop.
I want to take a few more phone calls. We're running so low on time. Howard's in Stanford. Hi, Howard.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's up?
I have Parkinson's, and my Parkinson's physician in New York, seeing that I'm a Connecticut resident, has suggested that I participate in the Parkinson's marijuana program in Connecticut, and I'm particularly concerned because I have dyskinesia, and he feels that it would be particularly effective. So I'm going to be seeing a Connecticut physician next week, and the question is, what do I do with a prescription so as to get it filled by a pharmacy?
That's a great question. Gerianne?
So there's really hope for that dyskinesia. That's what we're actually seeing the best treatment for. After you see that physician and he actually certifies you, he won't be writing you a traditional prescription, but when he goes on the state's website and certifies you, then you'll need to do your part to prove that you're a Connecticut resident and that you and prove your identity. So you can come to call any of the dispensaries that are closest to you, and I'm sure that they can help you to upload those documents to get you into the DCP system clean so that you can get your card.
Along these lines, quickly, Martin actually writes us and says, I think it's essential that the detailed information is provided to HCPs and patients and that there are other sources of this information than the dispensaries, which are trying to make a profit. This is what Martin writes, but I think it's a very fair question, Gerianne. If you are the repository of the information about this and you're trying to sell a product to someone, that's probably not the only way they should get this information. How do we get more information into all sorts of people's hands?
We have some marketing that's going on right now. The commissioners, the DCP has been doing their sense of marketing. Our academy has also put out some marketing. I'm honestly not sure what the best route to get that information out is.
I mean, do you have some thoughts about that? We talked about the list of doctors, for instance. I mean, just getting information out there in the broadest possible way, because you want to be able to have a point of contact like Gerianne, but you don't want that to be the only point of contact for something like this.
Exactly. And that's why we have information on our website, ct.gov/DCP/MMP. We're out speaking both to doctors groups, to patient groups, to civic groups, to business groups. We have the PSAs that are running. So we're building information daily. We're on shows like this all the time. And thank you, by the way.
Well, we're happy to do it. Kurt, we have about 30 seconds left. Should people be at all frightened, scared, whatever, worried about getting involved in this program?
I don't think they should. I think that, the whole process was very discreet. It's for the people outside looking in, I believe there is some need for more information. It's a very comfortable process. The doctors that are certifying are great. The facilities have been great and the products are great. All of the things that go along with marijuana and that stigma, those are personal decisions that people have to make. But there is a movement, I have to say, with the patients, they want to share. So they want to share information.
I want to thank Kurt and Jerry and Tom and also Jonathan Harris, who's the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Thank you all for joining us
thank
and talking
you.
About this
thank
today.
You.
Our program produced by Tucker Ives, Betsy Kaplan, Lydia Brown. Our technical producer is Kyone Wolf. Our digital editor is Heather Brandon. Our executive producer, Katie Talarski, gets married tomorrow in Iceland to the greatest guy, Michael Galvin. Congratulations, Katie and Michael. I hope you have a fantastic trip. And you have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Where We Live.